Hello, excuse me, the recording is started. You can go ahead. Thank you.
Okay, who would like to do a roll call?
I'll do that for you, Ray. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's GCOT call on Wednesday, the 24th of March, we've got Ray Fassett, Avery Doria, Ron Andruff, Wolf Ulrich Knorben. From staff, we have Julie Headland, Ken Bauer, Glenn de Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. I don't have apologies from anyone, and if I can remind everyone, please to state their names when speaking, and I hope I haven't left anyone off the list. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is Ray Fassett. Sounds like we have a pretty good attendance on the call today for our work team. And, you know, I'm going to have to mention that I will need to be brought up to speed a little bit on what occurred in Nairobi with regards to the abstention procedures and the status of that. So I thought maybe we can go through a quick review of that. And then it's now coming to my attention that the work team would like to discuss, you know, the term limits language. And I did receive the email from Julie. Thank you, Julie, with regards to that. So with that said, is that an appropriate start for everybody?
Yep.
Okay, so a quick summary. Who can give me a quick summary on the status of the abstention language, what happened in Nairobi? I don't believe the abstention language made it in front of the council as we had hoped, but we tried. So where are we at now in terms of getting this in front of the council?
Ray, Julie, this is Ken. I think I can summarize it. I have some notes in front of me here that I took from the recording.
Right. Actually, and I was there as well. But I, Ken, before you start, let me ask, since Ron, you were at both meetings there in Nairobi, did you want to give any of your thoughts from the OSC discussion?
No, thank you. I actually would welcome hearing Ken's comments first on that, and then in terms of the OSC, it was. As I understand it, Julie, we basically said that there were still a couple of issues that were outstanding on this, or I'm a little vague on it myself, quite frankly.
So, yeah, I'm Ron. This is Julie. There were some issues outstanding. I have some notes on that as well, but why don't we have Ken go ahead, and I'm sure he's captured the same things I have, and if there's anything I can add, I'll do so. Thanks.
Thank you.
And Avery was there as well. Avery, I don't mean to keep you out. obviously, I'm interested in your comments as well.
This is Ken. With respect to the abstentions discussion, Steve Metallitz actually did most of the talking in that time frame. One of the questions he asked was, do councillor vacancies cause the voting denominator to change? And I thought that was a very provocative question, and I have started to analyze that. And, in fact, in the section that we're working on for absences, I have actually written some material in there that addresses the point that he raised. So the issue of folks is that, you know, if let's say that a councillor resigns, right, obviously the stakeholder group would make provisions to get another councillor in, right, to elect somebody to replace that councillor. But what happens in the interim period? So you've got 20 councillors voting, somebody resigns, there's now 19, and would that issue cause the denominator to change? I raised on the OSC call that there is precedent for that, because in the very, very first meeting under the new structure, I think it was Wendy Seltzer's position was not permitted to vote, and we did drop the denominator, that we decremented it by one for those voting calculations. I don't want to say that it was a precedent, but it was done. And so I think we ought to fix the procedures in the GNSO operating. We should fix those to make a provision that even in the case of a resignation or other permanent reduction in the council membership, or I shouldn't say permanent, but you know what I mean, that we should allow a temporary alternate to come in. That way we still don't have to drop the dump. So I thought that was an extremely important comment that Steve made, and it was captured, discussed, and I am in the process of remedying that now.
Ken, this is Julie. I'd just like to add on that one of the related to that question, Steve Metallitz asked whether or not a permanent alternate could be assigned to that alternate slot. And I think, Ken, that you noted that ICANN legal staff had counseled against setting a permanent alternate, but that there was nothing to prevent the same temporary alternate from being repeatedly assigned.
Right. That was going to be my next point, yes. So that was the next subject. I'm not sure if they were exactly in this order, but Julie summarized it pretty well.
Let me ask this question. What in that discussion on the former issue of a vacancy, temporary vacancy, did Steve offer an opinion on what the ramifications should be to the denominator?
This is Ken. No, I don't believe he didn't really venture an opinion, but I think what he was looking for, he saw a potential hole there in the procedure, and he was saying, you know, you make provisions for a lot of things that might happen, but what about a vacancy? And so, I happen to agree that that was a hole and a gap, and so we need to close it. But he did not offer an opinion as to what he thought should happen that I can remember.
Well, I think there is a threshold question that, you know, what should be the outcome of that. It's closing it is addressing it is one aspect. Closing it is another. So, you know, what is the feeling of the work team in terms of how to address that? Should the denominator be changed in that instance, or should we close it in a way that basically says, so long as the number of council members is X number, the denominator will not change, including in the case of a vacancy. Yeah, please go ahead.
I think I hear Avery also.
Yeah, but I can go back to mute and then speak after you speak.
Go ahead. You're good to go.
Go ahead, Avery.
Oh, okay. I think that my gut instinct says, no, we should just reduce the denominator. But since the logic that we've picked everywhere else is to do everything possible to not decrease denominators, I think that the solution being suggested by staff makes sense.
I think so. If I understood Avery correctly, she was saying we should not reduce the denominator because we worked so hard to maintain the denominator all the way through, and that's where I was coming from. I like the idea of a temporary alternate. You know that I take it back to our constituency. If the BC was missing a representative, we would immediately appoint someone to be a temporary representative in lieu of that. If someone resigned, for example, so I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be going that route.
So if I hear correctly, it's reasonable for us as a work team to say, well, okay, we understand that an instance could happen that there would be a vacancy, but reasonably we think that the stakeholder group or constituency would address that on their own, and therefore, reasonably speaking, reasonable people can agree that there's no need, therefore, to change the denominator. Is that basically the gist of it?
Yes, Ray, it's Wolf speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just give you an example. So last special council meeting around the nomination of the review team members, we did so already because I was not able to participate. It seemed to me, because I was on a flight, so I could manage it, but in that case I had as an alternate Tony Holmes for that, and that was accepted as well. So he could vote as well, for one absentee here. And so in this case, a denominator, or I'm wrong in this way. So he was able to participate and also to vote, to take a vote. So there was no need, to change the denominator in this case.
Okay. All right. Well, that was pretty easy then to get to a sort of a consensus position on that. I don't disagree. Now, Ken, you had a remedy then to offer as well?
Yes.
I've already
taken a stab. I assume this is where you guys were going to come out on that. Maybe I should have waited, but I already wrote up all the language for handling vacancies. You haven't seen it yet because I'm sharing it with Rob Hogarth, and he and I have not had a chance to get together and review it, and I thought maybe I'd run it by Samantha in legal first, and then I would send it to the team. It's not very long, but I have written that all up already. And in essence, what it says is, oops.
Aubrey, you on?
Yeah, I just put my noisemaker on, so you know I wanted to get in the queue.
All right, please. Go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and cut Ken off, and Aubrey, I think you have a comment.
Oh, yeah. I think that it's probably best when there's suggested language that it be passed by here before going through that whole difficult process of getting it approved by everybody in the staff, and then see if this group finds it okay. We just save a lot of trouble.
Okay, so procedurally, you're suggesting, Ken, go ahead and send that to the list, what you're thinking of passing over to Samantha, et cetera. Let the work team look at it, and if we have any objections, if nobody objects, no one responds or anything like that, then we're basically giving the thumbs up to go ahead and send over to legal for their advice. Is that correct, Aubrey? Yes, Ray, that's correct. That's exactly what I meant.
Well, Ron said, that's how Ron heard it. I think Aubrey heard it the same way, so I think we've got a consensus on that one, Chairman.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Ken. I'll be happy to follow that protocol. The only reason I had thought about going the other way is because it was Samantha who suggested we take the absent stuff out of the original abstention language and create a new section for it. And so I thought, well, you know, let's make sure I've done it the way she had it hoped. But I think this will be fine. So I'll shoot this guys to you guys first.
Okay. And again, because we're all busy, and if a week. 2 or 3 days go by and nothing's coming on the list, you know, that's basically giving all you've done for us, and we know your work ethic and how you approach things. That's basically a message from us to keep going, Ken, keep going. Okay?
Okay. Shall I continue then on the OSC piece?
Yes.
Okay, good. So we discussed this permanent alternate question, and as Julie indicated, I responded, and then I also sent an email confirming that interpretation subsequently, that really a temporary alternate has to be limited in time and issue. It has to be incident-specific, at least with respect to the temporary alternate's function. However, the person who fulfills the role of a temporary alternate could easily be a sort of I use the analogy of a relief pitcher, like in baseball, right? You could have somebody who is going to be always your temporary alternate relief batter, relief pitcher. And so when you need a temporary alternate, you go to that person first. And if that person's already occupied, you go to somebody else. But there's nothing in the procedures that prohibits that. And I think that addressed the issue that he was really concerned about.
Yeah, and I think that's, the way I hear it, that sounds like it's, that's up to the constituency. That's up to the stakeholder group to decide how they want to go about this. We're not dictating to them how to do it.
Correct.
Right? Right.
Yes, that's Ken. That's correct. So this is Ken again, continuing. There was an expression of a need in the procedures to address all of the remedies in the charters of the organizations themselves. So what Steve kind of commented on is that there's nothing in the stakeholder group charter or his constituency charter that would allow them to do a voting direction, a proxy, or a temporary alternate. And I think it sounds like one of the things that staff needs to do is to go through all the charters, and I think I said this on the call, and try to maybe indicate some language that would work for all these charters. Where they could take advantage then, assuming the council approves Section 5, 4.5 for abstentions, that these remedies could then also be acted upon inside the charter documents.
Well, let me think about that one. Does anybody else have a comment before I do, though?
Yeah, Ray, this is Julie, if I might have a brief comment. One of the things, since I'm active on one of the other work teams that is very much involved in recommendations that will certainly impact or very likely impact stakeholder group and constituency charters, and that's the constituency and stakeholder group work team. There are going to be a number of changes, I think, that will result from that group's recommendations, and they're anticipating completing them by Brussels. So I just want to put as a note out there for this team that while there will be changes arising from the changes to the GNSO operating procedures, there will be other changes too. So we're going to have to, you know, coming out of the other work team, so staff will have to be mindful of gathering these things together in a way that reduces the impact of the changes on the stakeholder groups and constituencies. That is, that they'd be making their changes in one pass as opposed to getting repeated notices of changes that they need to make, since we know that would be a difficult process for them to then have to go through and make the changes to their charters.
Okay. Anybody else have a comment before I go? Okay, so my comment on that is I think we just have to be a little careful not to go down a slippery slope. I think we came up with how we approached this was we came up with remedies that are different remedies that a given stakeholder group or constituency could choose to implement, which is different than us coming up with methods dictating to them which method they need to pick. So the point of that is we didn't want to go down the path of dictating what each constituency group or stakeholder group wanted to have in their charter. But we gave methods that we think can fit into all of them without even having to read all of them, if you will. So while one particular method Steve may have mentioned could not work for his charter in its current form, I believe, and anybody can correct me, I believe, well, okay, let's, we understand that, but there are others that can be that we offered as potential remedies to the issue. Now, if another working group wants to go down the path of analyzing charters and recommending what each charter should be and offer that staff support, and that's fine. But I don't know if that's within our scope. I think we're all saying the same thing. But is that sound correct? In other words, Steve's concern is really not in our scope. Is that?
This is Ken. I think that's right. What he was saying is that he was just making an observation that in order for his constituency or stakeholder group to take advantage of the provisions that go into the GNSO operating procedures relating to abstentions, he would have to make some changes in his charters. So that they could do those things. Not that they're being dictated, that he would like to take advantage of them, but there's nothing in his charter that allows for them to appoint a temporary alternate, even though the GNSO operating procedures call for it.
Ray, this is Julie. If I could make a comment?
Yeah, please.
I'm looking over my notes from the OSC meeting, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Ron, but I think a suggestion that Ron made was that the final GNSO operating procedures could be sent to the stakeholder groups and constituencies and allow them to review them, and they, of course, can then decide themselves what changes they need to make, if any, to their charters. And, in that respect, there's nothing that this work team is dictating to the stakeholder groups or constituencies, but, they would have the opportunity to see what's been done. And decide what to institute. I think that the discussion around identifying changes, that could, conceivably be made to the stakeholder groups and charters was an offer that staff could assist, but not that direction would be taken necessarily by this particular work team or any other work team for that matter. That could simply be an offer of support that could be taken or not, depending on whether or not the stakeholder constituency wished to use it.
Okay.
This is Ron. That's correct. There was the idea was harmonization of the various charters into a constituency charter and so forth. So in that regard, there was the discussion about staff perhaps highlighting where the differences are in the charters or doing some work in that regard. Do you recall that, Julie?
Yes, and that's exactly right. I mean, we
yeah.
offered, the suggestion was that staff could assist in that way. Of course, we're ready to do so if asked. But it didn't strike me, and perhaps I'm wrong, that it came out as a mandate necessarily out of the OSC that staff had
correct.
To do that.
Yeah.
It could be helpful.
So I don't see anything for our work team to do here with this particular one that Ken just raised from his notes from the meeting. I don't see anything for our work team to do here. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay.
This is Ken. I would certainly agree with that. Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, that's what I was. Okay.
I was just reporting out what the discussion
was. Very
good.
Very good.
And this is Ken. I'll finish up. The last item that I had deals with what happens when, in the sense of providing a reason. I think Steve Metallitz raised the point that a lot of times in looking at the 2009 abstentions analysis, he agreed that a lot of the abstentions were really no votes that were characterized as abstentions, and he thought that the reason was because abstention is the only way that a voter can have an explanation recorded for a vote. And there was some discussion on the call about that, and Chuck didn't think that was the case. But what I thought we might do here, and I've already written this language up as well, is to provide a clarity on this matter, that for a yes, a no, or an abstain, any counselor has the option to provide a reason or explanation, and I think that would deal with that particular point.
Well, this is Ron. I would certainly say that would be the way to go with this thing, because I recall that conversation very clearly, and I don't see any reason why, if someone would like to put an amendment or addendum onto their answer, why they should be held back from doing so.
Yeah, this is Ray, and I think the board operates that way, the ICANN board. You know, I often see sometimes commentary by a board member before they actually submit their vote. So seems consistent to that. May lengthen the meetings a little bit, but...
This is
Ken.
Can
I speak to you?
Go ahead. Yeah, this is Ken. I found a nice spot, I think, where that particular paragraph fits in section 4.3 of the voting, where we talk about motions and casting votes. There's an eligibility section, and then right below it, I'll just read it. It's real short. What I've gotten drafted so far is, for each motion or action of the GNSO Council requiring a vote, counselors may enter either a no, yes, or abstain. In all three voting actions, at the discretion of the counselor, an explanation or reason may be provided, which will be recorded in the meeting minutes.
Aubrey?
Yeah, sorry to bust in. I have one question on it now that I haven't read. And for the non-discretionary, and I agree with giving everybody the option, for the non-discretionary abstention, or whatever the proper name we gave it is, perhaps that one should actually require still an explanation. And as that was the case before, is that the abstention required a statement. Now, the optional abstention probably should be voluntary like the others, but I have a feeling that the non-discretionary, if one of those is made or one of those is having the alternate procedure brought in, that should be stated and recorded as part of the vote. I don't know what others think.
Personally, I think that's an excellent point. I think, isn't that called the obligatory abstention?
Yes.
So
obligational abstention.
Yeah. So in those instances, I would agree with Aubrey that it should be required. The explanation should be required.
I would agree with that. This is Ron.
In all other cases, optional.
But I want to come back to the language Ken just read, and does that say that clearly? Ken, I'm sorry to ask you one more time, but just look back through your notes. Does it say that this is an option should someone wish to say it? I don't want this language to come back in such a way that people feel compelled to now start speaking.
This is Ken. In all three voting actions, at the discretion of the counselor, an explanation or reason may be provided, which will be recorded in the meeting minutes.
Perfect.
Now, that's to Avery's point, I have to go back and look at Section 4.5. In 4.5, where the obligational abstention is noted, we might have said a reason has to be provided. I was just going to check that.
Yeah. I think that's the way to go, Ken. This is Ron. I think let's check that, and if it's not there, then we should be including it there.
Okay.
Okay. I think we're all in agreement on that.
And Ron, this is Ken. That ends my summary of the OSC section that related to abstentions.
Perfect.
Great. Okay, so blocking and tackling. Probably our best course of action would be to take the version that was passed around in Nairobi, offer a red line of whatever additions are made back to the OSC. Because those will highlight what we heard from them, show that we addressed what we heard, ask for their feedback and review once again, or hopefully they only need to focus in on what the issues that were asked and we addressed, and then again with the recommendation to get this in front of the council to include in the council rules of procedure. Does that sound like a go-forward plan to everybody?
Yes.
Okay, so Ken, you got the red line done?
I could have it shortly. I mean, it's
no,
essence, yeah.
That's going to take a little bit because some of this has to go back, you know, to legal. Hopefully, that won't be, you know, overly take too long, but some of it will. And then once you know we sort of get the thumbs up that it makes sense to legal, then I think we would send the entire document back to the OSC.
Right.
Ray, this is Julie. I just have an additional comment from my notes from the OSC meeting, and I don't know if it's been made apparent to everyone here. May I make a comment?
Yeah, please.
There were action items which you are now doing coming out of that meeting, and that was that the work team should identify gaps in the abstentions procedures, which is what we've just done, and then, you know, go ahead and return the document to the OSC for review. The OSC also said that the work team should finalize its work items, basically all of the GNSO Council procedural changes, by the ICANN Brussels.
Okay. So I think that's a good segue into the next topic. So obviously one of the things that we have on our plate here is the term limits language, right?
If I may, Chairman?
Oh, yeah, please. Ron,
just Ron. So just picking up on what Julie just said, I think the goal is to actually not only have it submitted, but in fact that our work should be completed by then. So I think we want to back it up a little bit in terms of the date. That is to say that we're now closing out March, and then we have a June meeting, so we've got effectively April and May, within which time I would expect that the council would actually, the OSC would pass this on to the council. So the idea is that by the June meeting, all of the work of all of the work teams that the OSC is overseeing would then, in fact, be completed. So just for putting a time frame on this, I think the work we're looking at is really to try and get this all of our activities completed in the next, let's call it 30, 45 days.
Well, it's Wolf speaking. May I?
Yes, Wolf.
Ron, if I recall correctly, I think it was that this way that the team chairs should come up in Brussels or up to the Brussels meeting with let me say the targets and benchmarks for completing the work, and the work itself has to be concluded by the ICANN annual meeting end of this year. So that was my understanding.
I think we need to check with Philip, the new chair of the OSC, but my understanding was he was waiting on staff to give him kind of an update as to what were the open items on the various work teams and the goal
yes.
to be finished by June.
Right. If I might comment on that, Ron and Wolf, actually Ken and I have been working with Philip to put together a chart of all the work for the work teams, the OSC work teams, and we've sent a couple of versions to him. He has the finalized version. It's up to him now, of course, to release it to the OSC. But everything that I have seen, and Ken, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but coming from the OSC, and I believe I've seen that Philip has reiterated this in a recent message to the OSC, was that the work be completed by Brussels, with, although, Wolf, I do want to pick up on your comment. I did hear, though, that some of the then subsequent changes resulting from the work of the work teams, that is, possible changes to stakeholder group charters and constituency charters, was not expected to be completed in Brussels because of the anticipation that there would need to be quite a bit of time for that to happen, and then that deadline was going to be the annual meeting in December.
All right, so is the, I mean, at a high level, is the idea here that the work team is to be, all the OC work teams are to be done by Brussels? Is that the idea?
That was my understanding, yes.
I confirm that as well. That was my understanding.
Yes, I do hope. So if that is possible, I wouldn't like to postpone anything. So that's even better.
So then, coming back to that, I mean, then this is where I started to jump in a little earlier. The abstention procedures, as you said, Chair, are ready to go. The SOI DOI, which was the number two item on our wiki, as I understand it, is pretty well ready to go as well. So
yeah,
I don't,
Ron, this is Julie. Actually, yeah, that was discussed in the OSC meeting, and Steve Metallic, because we did actually say that we were done with that at the GCOT meeting in Nairobi, and asked that that be passed on to the OSC. In the OSC meeting, I noted that, and I had posted it to the OEC website, but I think it would be helpful for Ray to make that formal submission of the SOI DOI to the OSC. They've got a couple other documents that they've been dealing with, so it's not like we've lost time. They've been working on the communications work team output as well, but just to bring it to their attention that it's ready to go. I also wanted to mention that I have in front of me an email that Philip sent to the OSC in which he says, the top-line ambition in line with the Nairobi decision of the OSC is that all outstanding items from all teams should be done by 1 June 2010. That will allow time for transmission to the OSC for latest adoption at the ICANN Brussels meeting and forwarding to the Council. And then he says that in turn will allow time for community input by the ICANN autumn meeting.
Okay, so we're back to our short list of what are these outstanding issues for our work team, right?
Yeah, and if I may, Chair, I think that what Julie just suggested is right. As I was chairing that OSC meeting, we just didn't get to it on the agenda, if I recall, and that was kind of one of the things we wanted to discuss, and we said this will be submitted. So I think I would support Julie's recommendation that you send it on to the OSC as a completed work item.
Okay, yeah, right. I will.
There was
that.
Only one change, as I'm aware of, Julie, and that was we changed the word disclosure to, declaration to disclosure. So it's statements of interest and disclosures of interest as opposed
right.
to
I
declaration of interest.
It was correctly done, but I think, at any rate, take as an action item just to take one more read through to make sure that that's correct.
Yeah. And then send me copies. And then send me the docs, and then also because we've had this thing going on with the OSC chairs, Ron has helped and Philip has helped and Chuck of course has helped. You know who does this go to?
It goes to Philip now. Philip is now responsible.
All right. Okay, so just send it. So if I send it to Philip, it is being acknowledged at that moment by the OSC as a document from us. Okay, just want to make sure I got the procedure down. So I think we had a little hiccup on that leading up to Nairobi. I think Steve Metallis was questioning something that...
Well, he didn't get the documents, unfortunately. Chuck had sent the documents to a different list, and so he hadn't seen them in advance, and that was part of the problem.
All right. So somehow I think, I was in the middle of that. I don't know why, but I just think so. So anyway, but by sending them to Philip, that as far as we understand, that is us communicating to the OSC, right?
Yes.
Okay. So back to the question of what is our short list? And as Ron has pointed out, we have, what, X number of weeks? Eight weeks. And 8 weeks is four calls. So one item on this list seems to be the term limits. What else is on this short list that's realistic that we can really even get done in an 8-week time frame? And are we able to say come June 1st that as far as this work team is concerned, the rules of procedure are finished? You know, that's
well,
two
I
different...
Think, I think, Chair, if I may, this is Ron. I'm looking at the wiki now, and as I'm reading it, staff, please correct me if I'm wrong, but this issue of term limits and the special circumstances is to be discussed. You were starting to lead into that, Chair, when I interrupted you, and then number four is the new generalized board seat elections procedures. I'm not quite sure what that means, and new section 3.8 on absences, including allowing temporary alternative for long-term illness. I would have thought that part, absences, have been addressed, so I'm a little bit confused about that one.
I think that's what we were just talking about, wasn't it? Temporary vacancies?
I have produced a number of lists of what I thought all the GCOT outstanding, and I was just trying to hunt for one of those. And Julie, maybe while I'm talking about absences, maybe we can find that. The absence material has been written, and it deals with incidental absence, leaves of absence, and vacancies. And that material is what we were talking about a few minutes ago, and I'm going to send that to the list. And that's in Section 3.8 of the GNSO operating procedures.
But can you just draw the distinction between what we were talking about before and what this is, Ken?
Okay, so back in when we did the work on abstentions, we tried to make the temporary alternate work for absences, long-term absences. And we had that written in our document. And then legal said, whoa, take all of the stuff out that deals with absences from your abstention stuff and build a new section for absences. There already was a section in the GNSO operating procedure for absences. It's number 3.8.
Absentee voting, right, Ken?
Hmm?
Absentee voting.
No.
Absences. All right.
And so I took that section and I basically rewrote it and added new material to deal not only with incidental absence, long-term absence, and also this subject of vacancies. And we can retitle that Section 3.8, Absences and Vacancies. And then we can deal with all of these issues. So I will be sending that document to you for your review and editing and so forth. That's the one I had mentioned that I was going to send to legal first, and then Avery suggested we send it to you first, and that's what I'll do. Then there are other sections that are also that I will be sending to you. In Section 4.3, where we talk about motions and votes, that's where I added this business of in fact, I even just modified the language based on Avery's comment to say that, you know, for a vote of abstain, a reason or explanation is required. For votes of no or yes, at the discretion of the counselor, an explanation or reason may be provided, which will be recorded in the minutes. So that material will be coming to you. Plus, I also took a shot at rewriting the absentee voting section. You'll recall that we asked the OSC for feedback, input as to whether the absentee voting language should be changed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they didn't answer us yet.
Right.
And I think it's so. What I thought I might do is take a shot at the language that I would recommend, and then send it to you guys. And if you agree, maybe we send that to the OSC and say we were thinking about changing it to here. Do you agree that that's a good change?
Yeah. Right. So the plan on the absentee section was, you know, first to just get input. Is this something we should look at? That was really kind of the question. We haven't received not to look at it, so I think we should look at it as a near-term objective item. Just to dot that I and cross that T, if we want to say, you know, come June 1st, that we really looked at everything in the rules of procedure and that we felt was material to look at, and as far as we're concerned, the work team has completed its work.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, okay, so what's our short list of items here? It's the term limits, forgetting the abstention language, we know what has to be done there, and the SOI, DOI, which we know will be incorporated into the rules of procedure. Now, what is our short list? The term limits, the absentee voting section, What else?
There's this
3.8 absences.
Okay, absences. Okay.
And this new generalized board seat election procedures. Can
there you go.
Can someone explain that to me, please?
Yeah, that's number four. Okay, so I could take a stab at that. I'll give you their overview. It has to do with how Bruce Tonkin's seat on the board came up for re-election, and there was no procedure in place to do that, so they came up with one, a last-minute one, because the rules of procedures did not address how to do that. So they came up with a temporary method, and then it becomes a question of do we want to, you know, let's look at that temporary method, can it work permanently, and if not, how can we do it? How should it be written in a permanent way?
But was that not the registrar seat? I mean, I'm trying to understand what was unique about Bruce Tonkin's seat?
Go ahead.
Speaking. Well, you know, due to the improvements, reorganization of the council, so the two houses and so on, that the procedure is different from that in former times. So it's just up to the houses, but there is something which has to be laid down in the procedures itself, so how it is going forward. Because, for example, in the next year, the other house is going
to
elect somebody as well. And so we need a procedure for that.
Right. So Wolf, I understand then that's where I was thinking this went. This is actually the commercial stakeholders group house.
Yes.
And so we had decided internally, if I'm not mistaken, and I think this comes down to the charter, where we said that the registrars get to vote in 1 year, and then the following, next time it comes up for election, we get to nominate our person.
Yes.
This is Ken, if I might just jump in.
Please.
That's provided in the bylaws, right? So the bylaws established how the seats are apportioned to the houses. The GNSO operating procedures just needs to put in things like 2 months before that seat is up, elections need to be held. The details of all that, of course, will happen within
within
the houses, right? Yes.
Right, exactly.
But the GNSO procedures just have to lay out the sort of scheduling and dynamics and logistics so that we know how it's going to get fit in, and so that, in fact, it gets done. And that's the part that I agreed that I would take a stab at generalizing and writing up to put in the appropriate section. What happened for the Bruce Tonkin seat was some quick material was written up with some dates, and they were all specific dates, not 2 months before here or T-7. It was done like on January 13th, that kind of thing.
Right.
And that cannot live permanently in the GNSO operating procedures. And all that material was tucked into Annex 1 so that it would be easy to just change it once the new procedure is written.
Yeah.
Understood. Okay, very good. Thank you for that. Now, there's a lot of clarity there. So what I would suggest, Chair, is that we proceed in that direction that Ken has just suggested. He's got language, so let's have that. So what that says to me is that in terms of our work list, we're going to be, over this next period, Ken's going to generate some documentation for us to review. We can answer a lot of it on list and just get our approvals on it. And that really gets rid of the low-hanging fruit. And then the only tricky one, I think, perhaps here, as I see it, unless someone else sees a quicker way through, is the special circumstances on term limits. But otherwise, I think we're pretty well down the road here.
Yeah, Rod, I don't disagree. So in terms of timelines and deliverables, I can foresee that by the time of our next call, the OSC will have in hand the updated abstention language. They will obviously will have the SOIDOI. In terms of our agenda for the next call, we should have already been able to review online the absence language, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, what?
And the generalized board seat election procedure.
Yeah. So
just described.
So it's kind of hard to say, you know, what exactly do we need to have a discussion about until we see the language of these things. But reasonably speaking, I would think that as part of our next call, we should be able to complete one or two of these items that are on the list.
Ray, this is
yep.
Julie, if I might add something.
Yes.
So one of the items we had for today's call was the term limits and definition of special circumstance. As we have 6 minutes left on the call, as near as I can tell, and we do have that language ready to go, and there was a brief discussion on it. Are we deferring that to the next call, or are we going to try to take it up briefly here?
Well, actually, yeah, you just took the wind out of my sails. I was going to ask. I was going to ask the group, okay, so we have this language that Julie has given us to us today. I assume there was discussion on this in Nairobi. Is that correct? By the work team?
Yes, but limited.
Okay, limited discussion. Have we all had the opportunity to review this language? I have it now today, and it's not long. I mean, I think we can spend a few minutes. I'm going to read it. Does anybody object if I read what is in the body of this email? So it says, number 3, term limits, special circumstances. The work team discussed draft language for a new Section 2.1 in the GNSO Council operating procedures to address bylaw language, Article 10, Section 3.2, which specifies that the GNSO operating procedure shall define the meaning of special circumstance in relation to GNSO Council member term limits. After some discussion, the work team agreed to make this topic a priority for discussion at the next meeting, which is today. Okay, so I have attached the document for possible discussion at today's meeting, subject to a decision by the chair. Okay.
Right, right, Ray, actually, this is Julie. I'm sorry, but the language is in the document.
I am reading that,
longer.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm reading that. So I'm getting the background on what happened here. So I've opened the document.
Julie, what is the new language in this doc in the attachment then? Is,
right.
this, whole thing, is this whole thing new, or is there you're saying the new section 2.1 below? Is
right. It's where it says new section 2.1, and then that is the new language. 2.1, 2.1.1, 2.1.2, and 2.1.3. So there's a, you know, several paragraphs there.
Yeah. So this is really what we need to talk about right now, this new section 2.1.
Yeah, it's not that long. It comprises 2.1, 2.11 through 2.13. Everybody have a copy of it in front of them?
Yeah.
All right, so what let me just ask this, and I apologize for my nativity, but what is the term limit rule now? So there's a term limit rule now, right? And now we're creating, now this is discussing a special circumstance.
Ray, this is Ken. It's two terms.
Of 2 years each?
Correct.
Yes.
All right, so...
And we are talking about the extension of these two terms.
The bylaws provide for a special circumstance under which the term limit could be extended, and it only defines a special circumstance, which will be defined in the GNSO operating procedures.
Yes.
So this material is an attempt to define the special circumstance or circumstances.
The only question I have on this one, and this is to the staff, would be, could this be used by a constituency or a stakeholder group as kind of a way of keeping someone in that they would like to have on the council? Can this be abused? I guess that's probably the way I'm asking.
This is Aubrey. Can I contribute? I think that it most definitely can be abused. And before we consider language for such an exception, we really want to consider whether we want to continue with such an exception. As ICANN becomes...
Uh-oh.
Hello?
I have a feeling we lost Aubrey. All right, but I kind of get the gist of her concern there. On the one hand, it was the fact that it could be abused. And then the other... Oh, there, Aubrey? Aubrey, you there? Okay. All right, so let me offer a point counterpoint, the obvious first one, that it could be abused, or I think even Ron mentioned that too, is, you know, if it's being abused, it requires a 50% affirmative vote. I mean, we're looking at the language here, in each house. So if there is an abusive situation going on, I would think that the 50% will not be achieved. Greater than 50%, I'm sorry, will not be achieved.
It's Wolf speaking. May I?
Yes, go ahead.
I understand you were talking about the section 2.1.2, yeah? The question of voting about that situation. My first, more basic question is with regard to council member term limits. Is NOMCOM appointees covered with that? Or is that different from it? Because the NOMCOMs are appointed by the NOMCOM itself, and the question of extending for another term, is it up to the NOMCOM, or does it fall under this rules as well?
Okay, so that's a good question. It says council members, and then somebody, well, it says the constituency or stakeholder group has to petition the council and achieve greater than 50% vote. So it doesn't say the NOMCOM.
The NOMCOM is different from constituency.
Well, I think that says that, Ray, if I may.
Oh, it does?
That because it specifically says they have to go to a constituency, and the constituency is not, the NOMCOM is not a constituency, so that excludes them by definition. But why do you bring that in any case, Wolf Ulrich? Are you thinking that there may be a third-term reason for a specific non-com appointee? I would think they would go back to the non-com process.
I think so, yes. I'm asking that. But this is the question, the reality or not? So.
Well, I guess it's more the question, within the non-com process, do they have the right to keep a person in the council passed the term limit, and I would think that should be addressed on the non-com charter more than it is on the operating procedures.
This is Ken. I think what would have to happen is the NOMCOM would have to create a special circumstances language in their own charter, however they operate, because the council term limits are two terms for 2 years each, and the only exception the bylaws make provision for is a special circumstance that comes out of the GNSO operating procedures. But that's the one we're talking about here, so it would not apply to the NOMCOM appointees.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think the issue here of the voting 50% threshold from each house would certainly have to, you know, basically it's a vetting of that special circumstance. So that means consensus would have to be built within the community in order for that to pass. So from my point of view, I would be fine with this language.
Anybody else have an opinion on that? My feeling in reading this is that I hear the abusive issue, but I think it's reasonable to say that 50% affirmative in each house should be able to handle the clearly abusive motivation that we've raised. So I'm not concerned about that. Aubrey did have a second point.
Yeah.
Oh, there you are.
Okay, getting
good.
The second one now. Yeah, I'm still here.
Good.
The second point was basically, do we really, in a global organization, want to have a geographical exception like that? I question the need for it. I think all of the stakeholder groups should be able to fulfill geographical distribution. However, if we really think that we need it, and we think it's something that there should be consensus in the GNSO on making an exception, then I'd say raise the limits to, you know, the consensus limits for the council as opposed to just the minority limits.
What would you think in that case, Avery, 60% or 70%? What makes sense to you?
Yeah, I think that the whatever we generally use, so I think 60 would probably do.
I'm good with that.
Explain that to me. So in the case of not able to meet, in case of a special circumstance need, because of geographic diversity, that would require 60% affirmative vote in each house? Is that what's being suggested?
That's what she's suggesting, yes. And I think we already have that 60% in other language, do we not?
This is Ken. It's used for the election of the chair for one.
There you go. So we've got something that is procedurally already in the documentation that we're generating.
The other statistics that are frequently used are two-thirds and three-quarters. 66
okay.
And two-thirds and 75% of the others.
Okay, so I don't want to split hairs, but isn't 60% greater than 50%? I mean, it says
yes,
greater.
It is, but I think the point she's drawing out is that, just to try to make sure we avoid any gaming that's happening, to put that threshold at more than 60, at greater than 60, would be a more fair way to go. And I'm inclined to agree with her.
This is Audrey again. It wasn't just for gaming. I think we need to show that not meeting geographical distribution is not taken lightly.
All right. I'm not quite there. I'm not speaking as the chair. I'm speaking as a member of the work team. I'm not quite there, to be honest with you. And it's more of a philosophical approach. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the idea is I can, in the future, may accept new constituencies, accept new charters, new groups that come in. And it's really not realistic to think that every possible new constituency that I can think of is going to have the depth. Obviously, they'll let anybody join, but they may not have the depth of being global or members from all parts of the country, of the world, I should say. So I'm not strong on this, is my point, but I'll go with what the work team would like to do.
Great. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I guess two things on that. First of all, it's not in terms of new constituencies, although I realize that there's one stakeholder group that is still very strictly divided into constituencies. This is really more a stakeholder because the councillors are stakeholder representatives. But even if it were on constituencies, because some stakeholder group did parse out its seats that way, I'm sure that if it was a brand new constituency, they would have no trouble getting the thing. Of course, it can't really be a brand new constituency because we're talking about somebody's third term.
This is Ken. I want to add that there is no provision for extending to a fourth term. So the extent to which there's any concern about it going on, at the end of the third term, it's over, according to the bylaw.
Yeah. See, I'm not my own view in these rules of procedure. I'm not out to make a statement like this is more important than that is more important. You know, this is more important than that. You know, I'm out for just reasonableness here, and rather than make it longer than it needs to be, reasonably speaking, it says right now we'll require greater than 50% affirmation in each case of special circumstance. And as Ken points out, it's only for the third term, not ongoing. It just seems to me it's fine as is. That's my view. Anybody have a counterpoint?
Well,
I don't think we need to distinguish. That's my point. I don't think we need to be making statements or distinguish, but that's my opinion.
Well, I think the language already says is that, you know, it's got to be 50% of each house and so forth.
Greater than.
So what you're hearing from Avery and myself is 60% would just tighten that up a little bit. I'm not sure where Wolf Ulrich stands on this.
Well, I have two questions. One is, well, I'm not convinced with the diversity requirements on constituency level rather than on stakeholder group levels.
So I would really more apply for that, for stakeholder group level, because on for the counter, you know. So the constituency itself, may be diverse as necessary, but for eligible councillors, so it may be different. So I would like rather see that on stakeholder group level. And the other thing is for me, with regards to the voting, what in case if the council rejects, you know, the extension? So there may be definitely a problem for the stakeholder group with regard to that to the diversity in this event. What does it mean? Does it mean okay there is an empty seat, or what does it mean? You know what do I mean? So could that happen that there shall be for one term an empty seat in one house because of the rejection of the council? That shouldn't be the case.
Hi, this is Audrey. I don't actually think that would happen. I think if you're able to present a genuine case that says, look, we only have members from one country, so what are we going to do? You know, you'll get the vote. But if you can show that you've got members from three countries, well, then you know what you've got to do. Also, in the meantime, while you're figuring out that this temporary substitute thinking has been put into the rules also, so you do have something to cover you while you're recruiting somebody who perhaps hasn't been in your leadership to date but comes from another country.
So, Ken, I'm going to ask your opinion. Does the temporary substitute language cover the scenario of the extended term not being achieving the proper threshold vote?
Say that one more time, please. This is Ken.
All right. So in the scenario where the third term is voted down by the council, does the temporary substitute cover that scenario?
I believe it will, because it deals with. I'm pulling it up right now. In the event of a GNSO council member resignation or other permanent vacancy, the bylaws call for replacement. All right, so let's say that they try to replace and can't. During any transition period following the occurrence of a permanent vacancy, but before a new election and subsequent seating of the replacement councillor, an appointing organization may name a temporary alternate. So, yeah, I think it does, Ray.
Okay, so, you know, I can keep going on with all kinds of what-if scenarios here. So I think what we should do is just allow it to play out in practice and then see if it gets, you know, abused in certain ways. I mean, if the council votes down the extended term, then what's to stop that constituency from an ongoing basis just continually using the same temporary person? So there's nothing to address that in the rules. But you can go so long into this. Let's. I think we're at a point on this point that we just say, you know, we got to let it happen in practice and see what then needs to be remedied later. Okay, but my question here pertaining to this threshold is 50% or 60%. If I'm understanding it correctly, it's 50% affirmative, greater than 50% affirmative in one type of situation, but if it has to do with diversity, then it has to be 60% or greater. Is that correct?
No, I don't think we were saying that, Chair. I think we were saying let's just elevate it to 60% for both.
Okay, so we'll require 60%, not... Okay, so 60% or greater?
Yes, greater than 60% affirmative vote.
So 61%.
I'm going to let you wrestle with it, because unfortunately I have a hard stop. I have to jump off the call, but I'm good to go with either 50 or 60. But I feel 60 would be something. Just it's more in keeping with all of the other language we have. As
right.
Ken pointed out, we have 60, 2/3, and 3/4. I think we should probably try to pick one of those, and
okay.
I'm good with any of them.
So 60% or greater would be fine with you?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, any objection to that? Okay. Okay, so I'm not sure. Yeah, Ken, real quick,
well,
before Ron leaves.
Yeah, but, you used the term diversity, and I don't think there's a diversity mentioned in this whole section.
2-1-1. I think 2-1-1 has that, a constituent stakeholder as appropriate is unable to meet geographic / diversity requirement.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought maybe, Ron, that Ray was making a reference to Section 2.1.2, which is controversial for a completely different set of reasons. I'm not sure if we're talking about that, because it also has a 50 or 60% affirmative vote.
Oh, yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I'm referring to 2.1.1.
Okay.
Okay, so then 2.1.2, would that remain 50%, or do we want to make it consistent and say 60% or greater?
This is Ken, if I just might offer an opinion. The second one, this 2.1.2, I remember Aubrey making the point on the OSC call that she was concerned that her stakeholder group would object to allowing a reason that's other than geographic or diversity, which is what 2.1.2 is there for. It says for some reason a stakeholder group wants a counselor to serve a third term, but it's not due to geographic or diversity reasons. And we don't know what it could be. So there's a provision I wrote that they could make an argument and then subject that to a vote. Maybe that threshold should be higher.
Yeah. This is Aubrey. If I could say 2-1-1 at 60%, 2-1-2, put that one at 75.
Well, I'll let you guys hash it out. And if every way you go is fine with me, but I have to apologize. I have to leave now. But thank you all. And but I'm good with whatever the percentage requirement is as you determine.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, guys. Okay. Bye for now.
Yeah, just to explain myself, I can imagine occurrences where, you know, basically someone is so valued to the council, is in the middle of a big project for the council, whatever, and that you basically say, listen, we really want this person to stay for another term, for whatever reason. Then the council is going to give it that 75%. That won't be a problem. And so that means it really has to
Why?
Be extraordinary.
No. How do you conclude? I'm not sure how you get arrive at that sort of conclusion. What makes you think just because a constituent says, hey, we really want this for this reason, that they're going to get 75% approval?
No, I believe that if it's a truly valid reason, they'll get it, because I believe the councilors, by and large, are a collegial group that works together. And so if this person has been there 4 years and there's really good reason for continuing them, you'll be able to convince the rest of the council.
Yeah, but I think you're defining valid as 75% or greater. And I'm not sure that that's, you know, correct. I mean, I could say valid is greater than 50%, majority.
It's just too easy. It's just too easy to end up with people doing extra terms. I think term limits are important. I think people should live up to term limits. I think it should be a great exception when someone goes beyond a term limit. And I think that when those exceptions are merited, you will find that the collegial nature of the council will allow it to happen.
Okay. I don't disagree. Anybody, Wolf, anybody else have a comment on that? My point was only, Aubrey, my point, Aubrey, was only to bring forth the concept that you're equating validity with 75%. I don't disagree. I just wanted to make that point. Wolf, anything?
Yeah. Well, I think what I was saying is that if 75% think you have a valid reason, then it's been accepted as valid.
It must be valid. Or,
no,
all right. I mean,
it's
subjective. That's all I'm saying. It's subjective. It's okay. It's a subjective argument, not a objective argument. But I don't necessarily disagree. Wolf, do you have any comments on this?
Do you have any other reason in mind, Avery? So because we have the one specific reason is the diversity reason. And any other reason, I don't have anything, so no idea.
Yeah, we're putting a really high validity threshold, 75%, on a reason we don't even know what it could be.
Yeah.
and I'm not, it's something about that, I'm not quite as conclusive on that as you are, Aubrey. We don't even know what the reason could be. Yeah.
Right, and okay, let me put it another way if I can. Yes, the fact that we can't think of such a valid reason at the moment is actually fairly good evidence that you know, it should be a high threshold.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Wolf, any comments on that one?
No. For me, it's okay. It's, you know, if there is a reason, it should be a special circumstance. So we now are going to categorize the special circumstances, but
yeah,
not knowing what kind of category it may be.
Right.
So,
all right. Well, I'm okay with if we change the language to say 75% or greater. Wolf, do you object with that?
No.
Okay. All right. So I know Ron doesn't object as far as I know. So I think you're hearing from the work team, Julie, that this we just did what you were hoping we would do, which was go through this entire thing. Now, the only thing we haven't gone through is 2.1.3. So I'm just going to take a quick read of that right now. And by the way, I don't think we're pushing this through. I think we are deliberating each one of these sections.
Yeah.
Council members approved to and serves the third. Oh, okay. It's just saying that they can't run again. Or they have to skip a term before they can run again. I don't disagree with 2.1.3. Does anybody have any thoughts on that one?
No.
Okay. So when I'm looking at these sections, these are the section numbers that they would fall under in the rules of procedure. Correct?
Yeah.
That's correct. All right, so I would ask that as part of our blocking and tackling that this would be part of the red line. When we're ready to send this over to the OSC for its next review, this would be part of it. Even though they may not have asked for this section, I don't know if they did or didn't, but it'll be part of their next review.
Yeah, wait. What about, I would like to come back to the question of constituency or stakeholder group or both, you know, in 2.1.1A.
Uh-huh.
So I could follow, as also Avi pointed out, it's up to the stakeholder group, the counselor, you know, to appoint counselors. Okay, there are rules under the stakeholder groups, okay, but it's officially it's stakeholder group. So, and I would say, you know, I would also see from my experience right now, the diversity requirement is better covered by stakeholder groups rather than constituencies.
This is Ken, if I might. I agree with Wolf and Ulrich. I think all of these cases in this particular section where we talk about constituency or stakeholder group should all be changed to stakeholder group. This is an issue that I just it skipped my attention that was pointed out to me by Samantha in legal. The bylaws don't make provision for constituencies to elect counselors, only stakeholder groups.
Yeah.
Stakeholder groups may delegate that to a constituency, but with respect to these procedures and the bylaws, I think we just need to stay out of that. So we can really say here, we can take constituency or out of all these.
This is Aubrey. I agree.
Good suggestion.
Yeah.
Please do so.
Yeah, I've just made that change.
Okay. So, all right. So. This will then be included as part of our next draft into the OSC, correct?
Okay.
As a red line item. Okay. So that for now knocks us down to three items.
I just want to be clear that I've got this right.
Mm-hmm.
In 2.1.1, the threshold stays at 50, or did it go to 60?
This is Julie. Ken, it went to 60. My understanding is 2.1.1, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ray, is now greater than 60%, and 2.1.2 is greater than 75%.
It's actually in a little bit of both. I think 2.1.1 is 60% or greater.
But
and
it's required.
I'm sorry. I can't hear.
I'm sorry. I'm making noise, and I'll get right off again. I don't think it really matters, given the things I've seen about how the numbers behave. I think if you say at least 60 and at least 75, you'll be fine.
Yeah,
but
that's exactly right.
Yeah. Right. This is Julie. The way it reads right now is approval requires greater than 50% in 2.1.1, and in 2.1.2, action will require greater than 75%.
Yeah, I think we're looking to change the words greater than to at least.
This is Ken. I don't think that's necessary, Ray. We use greater than percentage all the time in the bylaws and in the in all the other default thresholds.
Yeah, just use whatever default language is. Since the numbers are so, you know, spaced out, it shouldn't matter. Whatever language is always used.
All right, it must be the financial person in me that says 60% is not the same as greater than 60%.
That's correct. In other words, 60.1% would succeed, and 60 would fail.
Right. So I'm just drawing out the distinction, but I'm not hung up on it. If you want to just keep it as greater than and have it be 60% in 2.1.1 and 75% in 2.1.2, I'm okay with that. I'm just making that distinction so we all understand. Okay. Okay, so.
Yes. No, I understood that 60 and greater than 60 and were different. I was just saying when you looked at what those percentages meant in terms of the existing number of counselors, mm-hmm. it wasn't terribly significant.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So I think this addresses the this particular language. To go ahead and go into the rules of procedure, I think you've got a direction from us, Ken and Julie. So that leaves the three items, which for us to look at as part of our next call. Now, in terms of prioritization, somebody please remind me what the three items are. One of them is what we called board seat 13. One of them is absences language. Is that correct? And then what was the third one?
So we have the generalized seat election procedures. We have new section 3.8 on absences.
And there was one more.
Yeah, you're right.
This is Ken. There's a section 4.3 on motions and votes and 4.4 on absentee voting, but they're part of 4. They're part of chapter 4, which is our whole section of voting.
Yeah, absentee voting. That was it.
Voting.
That was it. All right, so we need to prioritize these three things. Is there any thoughts on how we want to attack this on our next call? In other words, is board seat 13 what we should dive into next? Is it absentee voting?
I would say, well, as both being board seat has a little we have a little bit time because. For the non-conductive party house, it's up to next year, well, to elect somebody. So the other things seem to have more priority.
Okay, so it's absentee voting and the language on absences. I'm thinking out loud that the language on absences shouldn't be too difficult. Ken's going to send out a draft on that for us, right?
Correct.
All right, so we have some opportunity to look at that pretty thoroughly. So let's unless there's objections, let's tackle that one first, then absentee, and in parallel, I think as well, because I think Ken suggested he already had some language to offer on the board seat 13. I think we can look at that in parallel.
Yeah.
Actually, Ray, I did not say that. I haven't written the board seat elections material, and as Wolf Ulrich points out, we have a lot of time there, right? So that's not going to come up for a year. But what I do have is language in section 4. I want to put in front of you, I'm going to give you the whole section 4, which includes changes in 4.3, changes in 4.4, and changes in 4.5, right? And I'll try to make sure that they're redlined from whatever we've already approved, so you can see what new material's been added.
Okay, so what's 4.3 again? 4.3
that's going to be the motions and votes where we talk about that you can give a reason if for a no and a yes vote.
Okay. And what's 4.4?
Absentee voting.
And 4.5?
Abstentions.
Okay. That's it. So that is sort of one-stop shopping on what is on our agenda. Right? Except for the board seat 13.
Well, and the new section 3.8, Mrs. Julie.
Okay.
That wouldn't be included. And I should point out that while we do have plenty of time on board seat elections, in reality, as far as when the next seat elections will happen, my understanding is that this was identified as a work item for this work team to complete by Brussels.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Cool. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just in priority, it does seem like we would have a year, but we don't really have a year.
Yeah, we don't have a year. Yeah, okay. these are the four things, well, down to three now. These are the three to four things that we are identifying as work that we have to complete by June. And then when we do, we're going to look at the OSC and anybody else and say, as far as we're concerned, we've completed our work as it pertains to the rules of procedure. There were some other things that the original board advisory group came up with that potentially could fit under this work team's purview, but really it's taken us all this time just to focus in on the rules of procedure. But when we're done by June 1st, the idea is to say, as far as we're concerned, these rules, we have addressed everything we felt necessary in the rules of procedure. Our work is completed on that. Right? And that's not no small accomplishment. So with that, unless there is any other business or discussion, I'm going to go ahead and ask that we adjourn the call. We kind of have our marching orders and go from there and end the recording.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.